to another week of Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. I'm your host, Nina Alvarez. Lit Up is a show about life and literature and spirituality and in any way we can think to approach it. And this week, I'm very happy to introduce you to Robin Flanagan. She is a journalist in Rochester, New York, who writes for local, regional, national magazines. And she is so much more than that as well. I'm going to give you a little brief bio here, and then we're going to jump in to the wonderful mystery that is Robin Flanagan. So Robin launched a writing career in the early 90s while living in a graveyard, and we will have to get back to that one, and has worked in newsrooms, winning several national reporting awards for 11 years. She now freelances for magazines and newspapers and has had essays published in various anthologies, one very recently and another next month, which we will be discussing in today's show. Robin's coffee table book on the city of Rochester, New York, where she lives with her husband and daughter, was published in 2008. She dedicates early mornings these days to working on an inspirational narrative nonfiction manuscript and a mindfulness-themed picture book for children, which we will both discuss. You can see more of her work at thekineticpen.com. So, Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I have known Robin for a couple of years now, and I've been so inspired and impressed with her life and work. She is a writer making a living as a writer. She is a very busy journalist. Robin is one of those people who you will routinely see in the Democrat and Chronicle, who writing thoughtful pieces, generally on, I would say, human interest pieces. She also writes on health matters. What other topics have you written on?
Some business.
Some business, that's
right. Some education.
Some education, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Robin has a number of, I guess I would call them, projects going on. One is a book in progress. It's not a novel. And the other are ongoing essays and a children's book, which I'm very excited to talk about. But before we jump in, I'd like to know about this living or writing in a graveyard. What was that?
Yes, in the early 90s in Baltimore, Maryland. Yeah. I guess the backstory on that was I was looking for a place to live with my boyfriend at the time, and I was in a bar, which is odd because I was never really in a bar unless it was at night and he was playing with his band or something. But for some reason, I was in a bar. It was the middle of the day with a friend, and we were talking, and some man overheard me saying that I needed a place to live. And it turned out that he was on the board for this graveyard that had had a caretaker's mansion on the property, and they were looking for somebody to live in it for free in exchange for opening and closing the gates in the morning and at night. And so I thought, well, that's a neat gig. So I did that for a year. I lived in the caretaker's mansion. There was a chapel off of the living room where I hosted poetry readings, and there was a former morgue in the basement that my musician boyfriend at the time turned into a recording studio. And it was this really wild, wild place to live. So
that is a really cool story. Have you written about that yet?
I haven't published anything yet. I definitely need to dig a little bit more into it before I think that it's ready.
Okay.
To be out there.
That's a very interesting way to start your kind of life. So I guess you're not afraid of graveyards then, huh?
No. Okay. Like them very much.
Where, if someone wanted to check out some of your recent journalism, Robin, where could they find you? What magazines?
Locally, I'm in the Democrat and Chronicle. I write for the alumni magazines at Nazareth College and the University of Rochester. I write for the Western edition of AAA Magazine, Rochester Magazine, Post Magazine.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's some national or international?
Nationally, I write. I'm a contributor for Education Week, which is the newspaper of record for K-12 education in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I also write for a couple of other trade journals that are education related. And then I also write for two mental health magazines that are published both in Canada and the United States. One is for people with depression and anxiety. That's called Esperanza. Mm-hmm. And one is for people with bipolar disorder, and that's called BP.
That's wonderful. So basically, for our listeners who don't really know, understand the life of the journalist, you have, are you considered a staff writer, or do you just pitch to the editors when you have something?
Mostly contributor. Mm-hmm. My clients I've had for quite a while, so they actually – it's kind of a mixture. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll pitch stories and they'll get accepted and I can write them. But I would say more often than not, I'm assigned the stories.
Okay. That's really wonderful. How did you get into journalism? I actually don't know this story, even though I've known you a long time.
It's a very old school type of story. Uh-huh. I had an English degree from college. So I did not go to journalism school, but I always knew I wanted to be a writer. And after school, I answered this ad to be a nanny. And the person – this was in Baltimore. And the person who answered the phone happened to be a copy editor at the Baltimore Sun. And so I talked her ear off about what I really wanted to do. And she referred me to a reporter at the Sun just as a mentor, Rafael Alvarez, who actually has since worked on The Wire and Homicide. And
right. The name is familiar. Yeah, yes.
So he's a friend of mine now and was a mentor back then. And so he then introduced me to a woman named Rosalia Maria Scalia, who still lives and grew up in Little Italy in Baltimore. And she, at the time, was raising three children as a freelance writer. So she then hooked me up with the owner of a community newspaper that was free. This woman offered for me to write for her for free. I did not get paid, mm-hmm. but it gave mm-hmm. me the clips. Once yes. I had the clips, I then pitched a story to the Baltimore Business Journal. That was my first paying gig. Then I got a job as an office assistant at a real estate tabloid. Once I was an office assistant, within 6 months, I got made acting editor. And then that gave me more clips and experience. Then I got my first reporting job from there at the Montgomery Journal in Rockville, Maryland. Got my second reporting job at the Herald Sun in Durham, North Carolina. Then came to the Democrat and Chronicle full-time in 99. And then was there until 2005 when my daughter was born. And then I chose to go out on my own and become a freelancer.
I'm going to record. Well, this is recorded. I'm going to clip that and I'm going to send it to every couple months I get an email from someone asking how to become a professional writer. I'm just going to send that to them from now on, because two things. It is a step-by-step process. It requires so much work and you have to want it so bad. And you have to be able to work at least at the beginning for free to get, like you say, clips. Mm-hmm. So basically you're building a writing portfolio to prove that you can do, you know, what you want to get paid to do. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. So I want to go back even farther than that. You said you already knew you wanted to be a writer. So when did that begin?
I can't remember wanting to do anything else. I wrote my first story when I was 6 or 7, called Santa Claus and the Magic Pencil. And I've just been writing ever since. Did a lot of poetry. Yeah. As a teenager, a lot of poetry my mother said at the time that she wished was happier. Working through a lot of issues, teenage issues back then.
Teenagers writing happy poetry should not be writing poetry. just stop, because you're not being honest. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, and in high school, wrote a little bit for the newspaper, was on the newspaper.
Right.
And then in college, had a piece in the newspaper, so just a little bit here and there.
You just always knew that you wanted to write, mm-hmm. loved writing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. So most recently, you had an essay published, and I want to pull this up. It was called Faith in a Folder,
mm-hmm.
and it was published in Talking Writing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about this piece?
Sure. Talking Writing is a great website, and they feature a lot of stories about the craft of writing, not solely, but it's just a really good place for me to go to read good writing and read about good writing.
Yeah.
And they have an annual issue that they call Faith and Writing, and they put out this call. And you were supposed to write an essay that talked about how either faith informed your writing or writing informed your faith. Just something about the relationship between the two. And I wrote Faith in a Folder.
And can you tell us a little bit about it? And then we're so lucky we're going to get to hear a little clip of it.
Sure. For me, it was about all of the 5.5 years I spent documenting my struggle with infertility. And just a little bit of what I'm going to read kind of introduces it. Mm-hmm. But it kind of I spent a lot of years writing, sometimes daily, but always weekly, about not only what I was feeling, but very specific details, because that mattered more to me than my feelings about it sometimes. I just needed to sort of document the process.
Right.
And so it kind of came back to the fact that I was – my prayers might not have been answered in the way I pitched them furiously to the heavens, but I was definitely supposed to be the mother of this particularly precocious child, and I can't imagine having any other child than my own. So
right. And to be clear, I don't know if your piece will go over this, but this is your adopted daughter.
Yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you mind honoring us with a little piece here?
Sure. Faith in a folder. I wrote it all down. The procedures, the pregnancies, the losses. It's all on torn notebook sheets and the back of to-do lists, between receipts for fertility drugs and an article about the miraculous power of holy water from Lourdes. In a plastic folder I keep in my desk drawer, there are tens of thousands of words. Begging words. Optimistic words. Defeated words. I'm a journalist, so I document things, even off the clock, wanting to create a record my memory will inadvertently alter or discard over time. I savor the mundane details, the brown boots I wore while doctors investigated my fallopian tubes, the smile I faked when a colleague shared she was nearly 4 months along, because they root me. To write that I questioned and overanalyzed would have been too vague. The details mattered. I wanted what I went through to matter, to somehow warrant that the way things happen is the way they're supposed to happen. Plain and simple, it was unfair that I had to work so hard to conceive while teenagers around me did it accidentally and newspapers ran stories about women abandoning newborns at hotels and rat-infested apartments. When I asked a nurse at the fertility clinic early on about our chance of success, her answer underscored the futility I feared. It's all hocus pocus. I struggled violently with the Christian faith I'd been taught to hold on to. I scoured my surroundings for signs the universe was in my corner, then wrote them down. After finding out I was losing my second pregnancy, I ran a stop sign and nearly hit an elderly man in another car. He swerved and pounded his horn, and at the next red light, he yelled at me. After I yelled back, blurting my situation in hysterical bursts, he held up a cross on a chain and mouthed, "This is for you."
Oh, I felt some emotions there. That's really, yes. If people would like to read the whole piece, can they find this? Where can they find it?
Well, it's on my website, mm-hmm. which is at thekineticpen.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can also find it on Talking Writing, but it'll be easier.
Writing, yes. Exactly.
Find it on my website.
Yeah, such a moving story. And the piece goes on. Can you kind of sum up the rest of it for us?
Sure. I just gave a few more examples about kind of my struggle with my faith and how our daughter came along. We had 3 weeks' notice that we were going to be getting her, and just how in those infertility years I was a lost soul who cried through sermons and dreamed that fertility drugs did horrible things to my body. And but because of my meticulous note-taking, it not only justified the suffering then, but has become saturated with new meaning now.
Wow, that's really incredible. And the whole experience, it sounds to me like, for you, the big spiritual awakening was that the thing you thought you wanted, the way that you thought would have to come one way, actually was given to you a completely different way. And it was the perfect way.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I also talk about at the end how one day my daughter actually came in and found me on the floor reading over my journal, and I was crying. And I looked up and I said, if one of these things hadn't happened, I wouldn't have you. And it's kind of like my story has become her story, which has become our story, which is kind of how I end it.
Meaning like all the steps you took towards fertility and all that,
Yeah, if one of those pregnancies had yes. gone farther, or had, you know, I didn't have to go through four in vitros, or if I didn't have to, you know, go through any of that, then she wouldn't be in my life right now. And that's all I want, is for her to be in my life right now.
Right. I love that so much. So I want to ask you, because whenever I see what you're working on as a journalist, I feel that there's an underlying effort, even, you know, when it maybe you're working on something you yourself didn't give yourself to write, maybe it was given by an editor. I feel like there's an underlying effort to talk about people trying to make meaningful lives, or trying to overcome emotional discomfort, people trying to find a cross section between what they do and what they love. I see this a lot when you post on Facebook, like a call for like, hey, I need to write about lawyers with anxiety or something. is that something that you're aware of? Is it something you're doing on purpose?
I am aware of it. I've seen that connection, and it's also when I wrote the author's note for the manuscript, that's a work in progress right now. I speak about that. That's actually what made me a little nervous about approaching the woman that I'm writing about, because I knew how detailed I wanted to go, because I did want to capture her process of going through something really hard and coming out strong on the other side.
Right. Well, that's a perfect segue to talk about your book. I actually met Robin at Writers and Books a couple of years back. I think it was at a book proposal writing mm-hmm. class I was teaching. And at the time, Robin was thinking ahead to when she wanted to submit her book for publication when it was ready. So she was, you know.
You're being too kind. I didn't know how long this process was going to take.
You were there to learn the process of writing a book proposal. So, and I remember then your first concern was that you were writing a biography of someone who was neither famous nor dead. And so it had the sort of sense of memoir, but of course it was not first person. But I think that what makes this story so interesting and relevant is, of course, that it is, and we will talk about this more, a story of quite an extraordinary story, experienced by a woman who is not a writer. And so, you know, in many ways, many writers are here as witnesses and voices for those who would otherwise not have those voices. So the story, though, of how and why you're writing this book is so wonderful, because every couple months since I met you, I get an email or a call about some amazing serendipitous like experience that you've had around as some kismet. So can you tell our listeners back from the very beginning the huge, we'll say, coincidence that brought this book into being?
Sure. Well, in 2008, my husband and I, along with 38 other people, climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. And this woman named Bonnie was one of those people. And that was in February. 6 months later, I didn't even think about a book at that time. 6 months later, my husband and I are having breakfast. And I was talking to him about the fact that I was very frustrated about the memoir I was working on, which was about my infertility, but I just felt like I was kind of over it. It just wasn't going where I wanted it to go, but I knew I wanted to write a book, and I was struggling with what to come up with. And he said, why don't you write about Bonnie? Now, Bonnie's a two-time cancer survivor who came home one night and found her husband of 26 years dead in the woods beside their house. She mourned their adventurous life together for about 18 months before deciding to do something drastic to kind of get back on her own feet and cope with the grief a little more, and she decided to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Now, we all knew her story, but it's only, you know, after the fact that we're talking about the possibility of me writing about her. And my first reaction was, there's no way she's going to want to kind of go back to that dark place, and how could I even ask her? But by the end of our breakfast, which was on a Saturday morning, which is important to this story, I said, okay, I'll call her on Monday morning. I did, And I just rambled for a long time explaining my side of the story and why I wanted to do it. And when I stopped, there was this dead silence on the other line, and I was very nervous. But she said, "Robin, on Saturday morning, probably around the time you were having breakfast, I was praying, and I said, 'God, I don't know how, but it's time. It's time I tell my story.' Mm-hmm. And Robin, God brought you to me."
Wow.
Yeah, and then I just started bawling at that time, and I just knew, and we keep talking to this day, however many years later, we keep talking about how we just know that this is supposed to be. So no matter how many deadlines of mine get in the way or, you know, whatever, I just keep plugging away and we'll get there someday. So I have a first draft. It's gone to beta readers. So when I got the manuscript back from beta readers and the notes, I spent another 4 months interviewing her for mm-hmm. material that was missing, her character I needed to develop. And now I'm getting ready to start putting those additions in place and filling out a second draft.
Right. That story, the beginning, that moment where she was saying, "I need to tell my story, but I don't know how." And that you know, at the same time, thinking, "I really want to tell Bonnie's story." Those are the kind of experiences that Lit Up is really about. Like, really those moments where something way beyond coincidence, way beyond anything we can explain happens, that conjures a book, that conjures a play. Those things that make me believe again and again that some people are meant to be writers and that we are meant to bring certain works into the world while we're here. And I think it's really important and bolstering to feel that we kind of have the universe's okay on, or even more than that, because it can be such a long, arduous, doubt-ridden process to try to make a book. So feeling that there's a sense of purpose and that you're on track with the universe, I think is so important for me and for a lot of writers I know. And to, not that you're always going to feel like that along the way, but to focus back on those moments where you're like, "This is definitely something I need to do and I'm supposed to do."
They're definitely grounding moments.
Yes. They're grounding as well as kind of put you in the ether a little bit. So I want to get back to this question of why you do what you do, why you approach your articles with this really humanistic perspective, why you want to tell Bonnie's story.
I guess the short answer would be that's what interests me the most.
Yeah.
However, I think the longer answer, and it's also why I feel like I write personal essays, is because I would hate to think that let's just take the infertility. I would hate to think that I went through all of that and for nothing. You know, I would hope that by sharing my experience, then someone else hears it and it helps them in some way. And so I guess I feel like I only have so much material in me. It starts to get boring saying the same thing over and over again. So I just want to do that for other people too. There's more than one story out there to share and that people can learn from. And I just hope that I can help be a conduit for that.
That's beautifully put. Perfect. Okay, so I definitely want to talk about your upcoming news. There's three things that I want to go over. One is your essay coming out next month in The Sun. The other is your children's book, ABC book. And of course, the third is your relaunch or revamp of your website. Mm-hmm. So first, tell us about your piece in The Sun.
Well, it's a flash nonfiction piece, because for those of you familiar with The Sun, it's a literary magazine out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, ad-free, wonderful writing.
Beautifully laid out, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Poetry, photographs, essays, fiction. And they have a monthly feature called Readers Write, where they give you a topic. It could be one word like refrigerator or two words like holding on. And you kind of write a little personal narrative that has to do with that theme. And I submitted for the holding on theme, which is going to be in the May issue. And it got accepted. Very excited about it because it's my favorite publication in the world. So I'm very, very excited.
There's nothing better than being published in your favorite journal. So can you tell us a little bit about Holding On?
Sure. Well, it's a story about how I have such a terrible memory and how I document things. And in particular, I kind of document the things I overhear my daughter say, even with her friends sometimes, just so that I don't forget. They're just too cute sometimes. So I will record her thoughts and her conversations and just her view of the world.
What I really like and find interesting about you, Robin, is that you are, if there is an archetype of a journalist, you are, every time we're at a reading, you're taking notes. Even if you're not even writing an article, you're just documenting. Like, it's like everything you do is as a documentarian, I guess. Or is that the right word? Anyway, but you it's like you're just cut out for the work you do. Your mind works perfectly. So you might say, oh, I have a bad memory, but it led you to being someone who documents everything, what you need to do mm-hmm. if you're going to be a reporter. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I'm very excited to talk about your ABC book. So based on what I know, you've written a children's book, mm-hmm. And it's okay, tell us I won't spill anything. Oh, sure. You tell everything.
Yep. So I started writing it when my daughter was 3, and she's now 9. But it's gone through multiple evolutions. But it's always had the same title. It's an ABC picture book called M is for Mindful, A Child's Guide to Peaceful Living. Right. And every letter has a word that goes with it, and then a short poem that parents or educators can use in the moment to help kind of as a guiding tool or a guiding force so that the kids can then maybe internalize it for themselves when they need it in the moment to live a more peaceful life.
I think that sounds like a great book. And where in the process are you? You're submitting, right?
Mm-hmm. So I'm writing query letters to specific publishers, right. And these publishers will be ones who work both with educators and sell to the general market, because I really I ran it by a teacher who said that she sees a lot of very easy links to the Common Core.
Wow.
And so I'm really hoping that other people feel the same way.
So if people want to learn more about you, read more of your work, get to know you better, they can check out your website. And is the new version launched mm-hmm. yet? Okay. Can you give everyone your website one more time?
Sure. It's www.thekineticpen.com. Do you need me to spell that?
Please do, yes.
T-H-E. KINETICPEN.com.
That's so wonderful. So if there is one last thing you could say to our listeners, maybe someone who wants to become a journalist, what advice would you give to them? And it doesn't have to be like the practical, like how do they have to start thinking?
Right. Well, something else came to my mind, though, before the thinking. I mean, I'm a morning person, so I actually get up super early before the day begins and kind of plan my day and work on things that are not my responsibility then. So I don't know if
so get up early
or stay up late.
Stay
if you're
late.
If you're a night owl,
that's
stay up
my
late,
advice. But... stay up late.
Yeah, but just read. So what I do is before I start to write something that I'm really intensely, involved in or really have high expectations for myself, I'll pull out Joanne Beard, or an essayist, or The Sun magazine, or some place where I can just open up, literally read a few paragraphs, and then my brain thinks completely differently after doing that.
That's actually really excellent advice. Yeah, instead of just jumping into writing from your normal life, have that conduit through a piece of writing, and you're going to start thinking like a writer, and you're going to, you know, it's very organizing as well. It's been so great to have you on, Robin.
Oh, thank you
so
much.
Thanks for coming on. This has been Lit Up with Nina Alvarez, and join us again next week. Until then.